Everybody, I'm Jennifer with Michelle Marketing Strategies, where I specialize in helping healthcare IT and provider organizations get more leads and grow their businesses. Today on the Healthcare Lead Generation Podcast, we are talking with Sarah Worthy. Sarah is the CEO of DoorSpace, which is a digital talent management system for healthcare. You can find it at doorspaceinc.com. Sarah, welcome. It is such a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Jennifer.
Well, I think it's a really exciting topic. Let's talk a little bit about the issues behind talent management for healthcare. So if someone is having issues with talent management for their health system, what are those issues look like for those of us who are listening? What are the problems that are coming up in that field now? What are they dealing with?
Well, there's so many challenges in healthcare around talent management, specifically where I've been focused with DoorSpace is on helping to connect the back end of a health organization that's managing the workforce and the talent side of it to that front end that has now been connected through a lot of digital tools, information about patient data, billing, insurance, a number of all the financial transactions, that's all being processed digitally. And at the pace and scale of digital, but on the back end, they're still dealing with 90% manual processes.
Wow.
And the tools that are out there to help manage some of these HR and talent management tools are often very legacy systems that were built during the industrial era or not, and aren't really suited specifically to healthcare.
Why does that not surprise me in healthcare that you have something that manual and ancient as the system? Of course.
They still have fax machines.
I was going to say,
So there's a lot of problem with getting information from one department to another in healthcare. And when we're talking about healthcare talent, they're one of those highly specialized and regulated workforces. So a doctor or a nurse can't just walk into any hospital that has a shift open and start treating patients. They have to go through a credentialing process with the organization, as well as make sure they have their state license requirements, they have professional association training and requirements. And it can take several months to get a new doctor or nurse through this credentialing process before they're able to see patients.
And I had no idea. I didn't know it was that long. Wow.
On average, it takes 3 months for a RN position, and it takes as long as 9 months for a physician to get through this panel. And that it costs $30,000 a month to an organization in lost revenue because that physician can't see a patient and bill for that patient. So every month that they're waiting for that physician to get through that process, the hospital's losing $30,000 for that. So in a typical organization of 100 clinicians, with a turnover rate of 16%, which is really high, but that's the industry average, they're losing and having to replace 16 clinicians every year in a rotating cycle. And that's $2 to $3 million in lost revenue that they're losing because of how long that process is taking. And a lot of it is because they're having to fax and email and gather printed pieces of paper, manually type those into a digital system in one place while it's simultaneously done in many others. They're having to do primary source verification and chase down where a doctor went to get their medical license 20 years ago. And that's being replicated. Five or six different organizations and insurance companies are all doing this at the same time for one physician every time this happens. So that makes it almost impossible when that's part of your talent, just getting your talent in and approved to see a patient.
And what are some of the trends that are going on that are making this happen even more? I know that when we spoke previously, you'd mentioned things like mobility, but are there other issues going on in healthcare right now that make this even more of a need?
Yeah, one of the really unique things about healthcare that other industries are much more opposed to, you don't see very often, is it's very common and it's accepted that a doctor is going to have privileges and be working at multiple hospitals at the same time. They don't just have one employer at a time, like most people in other industries, and nurses as well. They often work at more than one place, and the organizations understand that they're sharing these resources like this. The only challenge is that when you have somebody that's working at two or three places, and each of those has their own siloed you know, system and process, then that physician or nurse, as they're moving from their day-to-day patients at different organizations, they don't have that continuity with their documents, and they're having to replicate all that information over and over again.
That's amazing. Now, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And telemedicine is another one that's experiencing this problem. If you're a patient in one state, and you want to, you know, to call into a telemedicine company, they're having to figure out how to mostly manually deal with the fact that they have physicians in different states from patients, and how do they connect them and make sure that those physicians are licensed in that state? Because you have to be licensed in each state that you're practicing medicine in through some sort of process. So they're trying to figure out how to deal with that. It's very complicated.
It sounds it. So let's move a little bit more towards the marketing of this. So this is the problem you're trying to solve. This is what DoorSpace is all about. And as a startup, you're setting all that in motion. So you're ready to grow. And obviously that's what this podcast is about. So let's switch our focus a little bit to there. Now, I know that when people launch a new product, the first thing that I am always saying that they need to do is to talk to their potential customers, to talk to the people they'll be selling to. And yet that's not usually the first step. Now, I know that you agree with me on this, that talking to people is very important. I just wanted to hear your experience with that, because so many especially in startups, especially in healthcare, don't realize that that is the first place to go, is to start talking to people. What have you encountered with that?
Oh, it's so crucial. And it's mind blowing. You're so right how people don't get out of the building and talk to people. Or they'll get out of the building and talk to people who are just like them.
Yes. And that is literally what we see over and over, isn't it? And then they wonder why it's not working for different groups, why some people are saying it's got bias in it. They don't even understand the connection there. But you're right. It's from the very beginning.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And you know, especially as a founder, like, I love my idea, you know, I do, like we all do. And we want to see this company grow. We want to be able to change the world for the better, the way our vision is. And so that just is a truth that creates a potential for biases to come in when we're talking to people. And it is hard. It's very hard to go out and have people tell you your idea is wrong or stupid or whatever. But that's kind of why I didn't come up with this as an idea. I didn't say one day, oh, I want to build a better talent management system than what's out there, right? I found a problem to solve. And I think that the way you approach when you're out there talking to people is you think about who are all the people that are involved in this problem that are somehow going to have to interact in order and start looking at it more holistically. You know, I have to talk to nurses, doctors, administrators. I talk to people in home healthcare, staffing, hospitals. You know, I talk across the C-suite, including CFOs, and it, just to get their perspective. And it's surprising to me how I sat down and just thought going into a meeting that it was one way because I've talked to a few people, and then this one person will add one perspective that opens up a window that suddenly changes the entire picture of how this needs to be solved and addressed more optimally. Just because one person in a compliance role or in a role that might not seem that big, they add a piece of the work process that goes, because this is a system with many
processes. And so tell me this, because I know you also have a background in marketing from your prior career, and let's talk about that, because how has that helped you understand who to talk to and what things to ask? Because I think from my perspective, sometimes it seems very obvious, but I don't think it is. I think that's experience. And it sounds like you also had that experience going in. Do you find when you talk to other entrepreneurs that they're also sharing that understanding of who to go and talk to?
You know, I think some people do it better than others. I certainly don't want to speak for, I don't want to stereotype entrepreneurs right now, because I meet a lot of them that do things really well. Okay.
So, of course.
You know, it's not everybody out there, but there are, you know, and we see this right now, there's just a large number of ideas out there that most of us are like, I don't really have any interest in. So you don't know where they came up with. But I think when it comes to the questions, it's unique to each situation again, but it's really got to be about understanding their problem. So I don't ask questions about my product. I don't show people my product. I don't bring a laptop to these meetings and demo anything. I don't ask them, do you want a better credentialing tool? I ask them, how many credentials are they managing? And what are the challenges that they are dealing with in their workflow right now? How much time are they spending on these different tasks? And I evolve that list of questions almost every meeting a little bit, because the conversation before adapts it and I learn a little bit more. But I really focus on that and what their budgets are.
Of course. Now, and part of that is a sales conversation. Any good person in sales and healthcare will tell you, you start out by asking all kinds of questions. And that's how the relationship begins. And that's how you learn what's really on their mind. But I'm guessing that you started asking these questions before you had even developed DoorSpace. Is that the case?
Oh, yeah. I mean, again,
absolutely.
Like, I first came up with this as a problem I was having with managing my credentials and the skills I'd learned that I'd applied. But, you know, we get to a certain point in our career where we kind of forget half of what we already knew, so to speak. And
haven't you ever done that where you have to, like, you look at your own resume and you're like, oh, that's right, I forgot that. That was impressive.
I've run across articles I've written. And I'm just like, I don't even recognize it, you know, years later. So I was like, I was a really good writer. Wow, like what happened, you know?
That's a good sign, though, if your career has those little nuggets to find. But so it was very personal. You were like, if I have problems keeping track of all this, imagine for this kind of a, you know, an environment where there's such a large number of people to keep track of and so much detail. So how long did it take you to go from idea to deciding, yes, I want to launch this as a company?
Oh, probably almost 2 years. I was just kind of doing other things. I even started working on this idea when I was at another company, getting ready to wrap up that role and start looking for another job. That was kind of when I realized that a resume just wasn't very good at communicating what I knew how to do. But because I'm here in Houston, which is a very awesome environment for what I'm trying to do, I had friends who were doctors and nurses, who were in financial, who were oil and gas, and I would just talk to them. And that's when I learned that my problem was very tiny compared to this other problem where these certificates, credentials, licenses were really required, and they had to be maintained in a way that was both the individual without that, they weren't able to take it with them from job to job. It stayed inside the organization. And so the organization was trying to manage all of this process as well. And I realized that's where paying customers exist, not just people like me who are learning nerds.
A learning nerd. I love that.
Right. Cause I just wanted an app that made it easier for me to collect this stuff over, you know, kind of a learning bookmark thing. And what I'm building now is a real solution for an industry problem that is, we're early to market. There's not too many other people out there trying to even solve aspects of this right now. So
how interested are people when they start talking about it? I'm guessing people are very much like, yes, that is a big pain point. That is exactly a problem that we're having.
A lot of them have this problem. It's so funny. It's really, really rare for me to run into someone in healthcare who's like a physician and they don't have this problem, but I do run into those people. And I think part of it is because if you're in a certain role in a certain stage in your career, you might be grandfathered in and not have to take as many of these new requirements. You might be in a role where not moving from job to job anymore. And they usually don't have that problem. But a lot of the newer graduates out of medical school and nursing school, and psychologists also, they're actually more interested in this because of the fact that they're so used to not having to deal with paper and fax machines, that the idea that they're about to have to enter the workforce and deal with this for, you know, the average doctor and nurse spends 9 hours a week on this type of non-patient related paperwork. So they're horrified by that idea. They're like, of course there should be an app for this. Why isn't there an app for this already? So
absolutely.
I'm finding it just depends on who I'm talking to, where they find that interest and why.
Okay, so let's Let's go to like the next stage. I know this is something you and I have spoken about. I know it's something that's come up with different people I've spoken with on the podcast as well. But there are not a lot of female entrepreneurs in the healthcare space. So that's a very unique thing, and it's growing. I know there are more and more female founders, but it's still a pretty small group, but growing. So what I'm curious about is that something that is a different experience compared to the other entrepreneurs, the male entrepreneurs that you're encountering? Or how do you handle the fact that people may listen to you or perceive you differently, especially when you're coming in with something very digital and very new that maybe they've not thought of before?
So it's funny doing this. I've been a woman in IT my whole career, obviously. So I've experienced the conferences where there's no line in the women's restroom, you know, that kind of thing. In healthcare, surprisingly, I do experience some bias. I think because I'm a woman, I mean, it's never been outward, and it's not been that much. And I think it is important that that's acknowledged, that we don't always, we're in those situations and we feel like maybe, but we don't know. And so I feel that a lot. But more importantly, in the investor and the fundraising side, that's where I really experience what I know is because I'm a woman. But interestingly, in healthcare, what surprised me is that it's less important that I'm a woman, and it's more important that I don't have some sort of healthcare credential and experience in the industry. And I do face bias coming in as sort of an outsider from the, you know, e-commerce digital world into healthcare for the first time.
You know, that's an interesting point to talk about, because I have noticed that in different experiences when I was working to market different healthcare technologies as well, which is, if you don't have a doctor as an advisor, no one necessarily listens, and or at least it's a lot harder to get them to listen, or if you don't have a nurse or whoever it is. And I find that it's interesting, because I see why it's important, but I also can see that it winds up being a little insular. And I wonder if it ever prevents new ideas from coming in. And I wonder if there's a way to open that up. Is that something that you've ever seen, that it can sometimes, I mean, obviously you want someone who understands a health system, but it might also be good to have someone who understands a different system as well, which it sounds like is what you offer.
Yeah. And, you know, I see it all the time in healthcare as well as other industries where, you know, the product is too niche. It's for too small a market. But in healthcare, it's particularly like this because it's very departmental and specialized. So you might see a bunch of, like, there's a ton of credentialing tools out there for physicians, but there's really nothing out there that addresses some of the allied health tech professionals, the nursing professionals, which make up the majority of the group. So, you know, you have an 8 to 9% of the healthcare workforce are physicians, and that's where most of these solutions are focused on. And that probably is because the person that the startup team is listening to is a doctor, you know?
So yeah, they're speaking about their experience and their pain point. And that it kind of ties back to what you were saying earlier, which is, you know, the need to talk to a range of people, because you broaden out, you know, what you can offer and what people are looking for.
Yeah. So. And one of my advisors talks about that book, I think it's by Malcolm Gladwell. I'm going to get the book wrong. It's like The Tipping Point or something like that. But he talks about how, you know, there's mavens and connectors and those types of people. It shows, I haven't read the book in ages, but he talks about how a lot of these healthcare decision makers, it's less about them trying to be sexist or biased or exclude outsiders. And it's more that maven personality. They're so used to being the person responsible for caring for others and taking care of other people's lives that they just have a little bit more of a protective attitude. I don't know if that helps get around it any. You know, it is hard when somebody just will meet with me because a mutual friend referred me over and they want to do that friend a favor. And then they sit there and just, you know, condescend to me and talk to me like I don't know anything. You know, that's not most people. You know, that's just
every it isn't most people, but I think it's something that happens periodically, and that you're not the only one experiencing that. So how do you turn that into something useful for you instead of just having to, you know, suck it up and get through it? What are ways to actually use that towards your work?
You can always leave.
Well, yes, you can if it's really bad. And I do think there are points where a person should, but let's say you decide not to.
Yeah, usually you only get 20 or 30 minutes with these people because they're very busy in healthcare. So it's not a long meeting to have to endure. And I think for me, I use those as opportunities. They show that women are better at negotiating when they are do it a certain way. And I think this is an advantage as a woman that I have, and particularly in healthcare, where if I ask them for information, a lot of times they'll just tell me. They won't hold back. And I have had male entrepreneurs be surprised when I've gotten information or I've gotten contact details from someone that they couldn't get access to.
You know, that's a really nice point, though, that I don't think we consider enough. I think there's more and more focus on, you know, a gender difference in experience with people launching a company, with people entering different areas of, you know, perhaps male dominated workforces. But I don't think we see that it goes both ways, which is maybe they're not as used to women in that space, but maybe when a woman does enter that space, they are able to get information that a man isn't able to get. And that just goes to show you that these biases in how we interact with each other, you know, help and hinder on all levels.
But you have to ask. In healthcare,
yes, you do.
If you don't ask the question, they will never tell you. But I've been surprised sometimes. Like, there have been doctors that were just completely dismissive of what I was saying. Not like outwardly rude, but just, you know, when someone's clearly just ignoring it and trying their best to be like, not rude, but just dismissive. So I try not to disparage these people, but they, when I asked, hey, so is there somebody at your organization that I could talk to that could help me with this?
Mm-hmm.
This person who had given me like two sentences in three emails back and forth total, suddenly reached out to someone else who, and to get this information, CC'd me. And then that person reached out to, so now I had like three more email contacts for people and the name of the person in that department. But if I hadn't asked this person, despite the way that back and forth was feeling, I think a lot of women would have taken that and maybe not taken that step forward and asked. And so I just want to encourage them, go ask anyway, even if you're getting dismissed in those meetings, ask for more information until they, you know, they're not going to call security on you if you're polite.
Well, it's also interesting because maybe what comes across as dismissive is their feeling that they don't really have anything to offer in that conversation. So when you ask them if there is someone who could help, they're suddenly very eager to help you out because that is something they can do.
Very good.
Whereas,
point.
You know, I think especially people in healthcare, they want to fix things. That's their MO. They want to help. So I can see how it could come across as dismissive when they're feeling stuck in a conversation that they don't know how to really respond to. So maybe that's part of it. But that is always a good thing in so many areas, is to ask. I mean, I think that comes up. I think that comes up in every level of marketing, frankly, which is ask your audience what they're wanting, ask your customers what they want next, or what was helpful to them, what wasn't. The more you ask, the more you can adapt and perfect.
And write it down. Write
yes.
down what each of them says. This is something I do now that I didn't do as diligently early on, but investors and other customers want the specific story. So if I can say this, you know, this title and it said this, and this person at this, you know, that means a lot. But more importantly, you're gathering that to look for those common patterns and trends in your market. And what you start to see, I talked to this many RNs in ER, and they're all saying this versus the RNs in pediatrics say this. And kind of, you know, you learn a lot, but a lot of people, they don't write it down. If it disagrees with what they think, they kind of edit it in their mind a little bit or dismiss it, you know, and so don't do that. Like, we believe your customers when you're talking to them.
You know, that's a beautiful way of putting it, because I think sometimes it can be very easy to listen for where they're agreeing with what we already want them to say. And the trick is to listen for the things they're saying that is different, and then expand to include or adapt to focus on what they're telling us is important to them. That's how you grow.
Yeah. And that's the biggest, I think, strength that I've been able to bring into this process, but it's hard because you know, they're not used to getting software built that way for them.
No, and I think that's one of the main reasons why people are so frustrated with so much digital technology in healthcare. So, you know, EHR, right? there have been a lot of struggles.
I'm with you all on that. Yeah, like there's, and, you know, I think that's, again, it comes back to just, there's just not enough listening and communication between the technologists and all of the people in the healthcare system. And you know, the healthcare side, they need to let the technologists be the experts in the technology as well.
Yes, and that can be very hard for someone who is usually the expert to give space to. I think that is something that is the right conversation has to open up for people to feel comfortable stepping out of the expert role and allowing someone else to be in that. And yet in the end, it can be very beneficial for them to do that.
Yeah, and it's going to be hard for everyone. I mean, the system has, it needs a lot of trust.
Yes.
In places where people haven't had to interact in that way before. So they're all learning. I mean, goodness knows, we're on the internet today, so we're all learning at this accelerated pace, all of us.
All of us. And it's a fun ride. I think it's amazing to see how you can take an idea about your own resume, your own experience, and then start talking with people and find out there's this huge need and create a digital system that can address that and then put it into play for people to actually use. I think that's tremendous. Sarah, it has been such a joy having you on this podcast. I'm so glad that we've been able to talk about this. I hope you'll come back another time and talk some more, because I think that talent management is something that is very intriguing and is going to be something that we're all going to want to learn more about. But I appreciate learning how you've brought this into being and the trials and tribulations of launching a startup. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. I love hanging out and talking to you. So we'll catch up on the podcast off of it, because, you know, we'll go longer if we.
Yes, we will. For everyone listening, believe me, you and I could talk for hours. We're trying to be kind and rein it in. And for all our audience out there, you can learn more about Sarah's work at doorspaceinc.com. Sarah is Sarah Worthy, if you missed the beginning of the intro. She's the CEO at DoorSpace, which is a digital talent management system that specializes in the needs of healthcare systems and healthcare professionals. And I am your host. I'm Jennifer Michelle of Michelle Marketing Strategies, where I specialize in helping healthcare tech and provider organizations get more leads and grow their businesses. Thank you all for listening. Catch you next time.